Welcome to episode 20 of Never Not Creative. Managed to do it, got 20 episodes out before the end of 2018. So after this episode, we'll be taking a bit of a break. I'll talk about that a little bit at the end. This episode is part two of my chat with Nick Eldridge, the CEO of AGDA, the Australian Graphic Design Association. And obviously last week we talked a lot about awards, and we talked about kind of all the things that sort of come into the process of working out who wins what and how, and how to select a jury and what the important things are in terms of understanding how to judge different pieces of work. And this week, in the second part of the conversation, we talk more broadly about AGDA and some of the issues in our industry, but also some of the challenges that AGDA itself as an organization is trying to overcome, and some things that I think Nick also is kind of very keen on setting right and getting some clarity out there about what AGDA is and what AGDA isn't. So I think it's a really great chance to kind of take a listen to where AGDA is going, clear up some of the kind of, I guess, perhaps mythology around AGDA at times. And again, I'd love to say thanks to Nick because he was really open and honest during this conversation. Can't be an easy job when really what you're trying to do is support a lot of the industry, and you know, it's almost impossible to please everyone at times. So I want to say thanks again to Nick for coming on. Sit back, get nice and comfortable, and listen to the end of my chat with Nick Eldridge.
Back to that point around, like, you know, one of the discussion that comes up quite often is like, how can we be more relevant for the design community? How open is that conversation? Because it does, you know, and obviously you hear lots of different things from lots of different people, but there is sometimes the idea that there is a conversation happening out in the community, but then there is a conversation happening in the ivory tower of AGDA, and people would just like to know that, you know, actually, yeah, what we've been talking around over here is being discussed, or actually AGDA's now asking the questions of the community, rather than kind of just having a listen and then making a decision, which I'm sure actually doesn't really happen. And maybe these conversations are actually, they do happen in kind of informally, but when you are seen as a kind of like a governing body or an institution that sits and does have that remit, is there a way that the conversation can be more open in some ways, and actually also more formal in other ways, I guess, in like being able to go, hey, this is what we are thinking around right now, we need to know what the community thinks.
Yep. Well, I'll start that, my answer to that, by saying AGDA is run by people in the community.
Yeah.
So we have the board is people from within the community. The councils around the country are from people within the community. We're all on social media. We all have friends who are not on councils, who are not members, who operate as designers. So I think it's a bit disingenuous to think that AGDA sort of operates in isolation. We're enmeshed. We are part of the design industry, whether people like it or not, by sheer fact of the numbers of people that are feeding information up to the board. So we talk to our regional councils quite regularly to get feedback on particular issues. We have discussions on everything from event speakers through to protocol issues on what goes on social media after, you know, something might have flamed up in Perth, and, you know, we have a discussion with them about what's, you know, how do we fix that? What's the protocols around that? Why did you make that decision? And it's, we do get a lot of information filtering up that way. That being said, we have done in the past and will do in the future, and one's coming up very soon. We do survey the industry So yep. we send out questionnaires and, you know, what do you think AGDA needs to be doing in this area? But at the end of the day, someone needs to actually make a clear-cut decision, because it's a bit like that Never Not Creative set of protocols or guidelines you had.
The pledge, yeah.
Yeah, the pledge, that's it, which was fantastic. I loved watching that grow. Like I added some, you know, about $1.
Yeah, you did.
But I loved seeing other people's comments around some of those issues. And while they weren't things that specifically related to me and my situation, I certainly understood where they were coming from and understood why that might have been a problem. So seeing that get built and then refined and put forward, I thought was a really good process. I'd like to see AGDA use a similar process for some things. I'm not sure how workable that might be on a larger scale or around the country, and how we'd manage that that outcome at the end. But yeah, might be an offline conversation I have with you about what you learned from that process. One example of where we might bring it into play. We've been wanting to revise our code of ethics for a while. We've got a fairly practical code of ethics that's not thinking about the big picture of being a designer in a broader landscape, a citizen of the world rather than just a designer in business. And so we wanted to put some more grander ethics into that code. And, you know, things around diversity, inclusion, but also things about, you know, not creating systems or programs or applications that will, you know, trick people into buying things they don't need. And, you know, those little things that are starting to crop up in our industry as discussion are important for us to stay, you know, it's the old adage of, do we design cigarette packs or not? You know, and there was a very clear answer from designers back in the 90s that was we don't do that. So I think there's a whole new range of things that we need to adapt to. But that's one of the things we're working on, and trying to get designers though to agree on those things is another project entirely.
Yeah, definitely. And you're right, like, you have to ultimately, you do have to listen to what everybody is saying and then make a call. Like, you know, we're at the end of the pledge. We'd watched everyone write things. There were things that we'd forgotten, you know, like we had to start somewhere. So we wrote something, and then there were people who added extra things in, and then there were, absolutely some things we'd forgotten. And then, but we had to sit down at the end of it and go, okay, so what makes it in and what doesn't? And it feels like it got to a good place. We're actually hopefully going to formalize all of that very shortly. I've just asked someone to kind of help out with getting it up online. It feels like 30% of the job, to be honest. The next bit is like, how do you use it? And there's definitely an interesting thing which would be good to hear from you about in terms of AGDA, which is sometimes it's very hard to play the kind of universal representative when they're in a governing body, when there are employers and employees, for example. So where does AGDA sit when it comes to kind of agency owners versus designers in general? Because there are some things that you want to protect for some, but you know that, and I can imagine some of the discussions where I'd imagine quite a few of the board would potentially be on or have their own businesses, where the things that you're having to pass off actually probably are going to have an impact on your business, which must be quite hard to wear two or three hats even. How does that get managed? Is that the thing that actually sometimes can hold things back? Yeah,
it certainly does. And look, and I'll use a free pitching as an example of this. We all, as individual designers, whether we're owners or employees, generally have a belief that free pitching is not in the best interests of the designer. And in the past, AGDA has had has taken a stance of a thou shalt not free pitch, you know, waving the finger and saying that you shouldn't be doing this. And some designers get very militant about it. My belief is that rather than taking that stance, it should be more of a an educational stance. That you can free pitch if you want to, but here's the case study of why it's bad for your business. That we promote best practice in design, and best practice does not include free pitching because it devalues the thing that you're selling. It doesn't allow for a due process to occur to enable you to provide the best results for the clients and things like that. So we're talking to them about how to run their business better. And if Studio X wants to go on free pitch, we'll let them. I don't see that AGDA has either the authority or the clout to be able to say you can't do that. And, you know, we could possibly, you know, withdraw someone's membership if they do, and there's been talk about that kind of stuff. But I don't really think that's the answer for that problem. Internships, though, I think is a different kettle of fish.
Yep, great. One of my favorite topics.
Yeah, internships, I believe, has, and I don't know where it's come from, because I know when I was in my 20s, there was hardly any of it done. Like, it was a very rare occurrence that you'd see an internship being offered. So somewhere along the line, someone decided that this would be a great idea, and it started off as work experience and then became an internship, and it's gradually evolved to a situation where we've seen examples of studios cycling through interns, unpaid interns, and using them to, you know, pull up.
Do paid work.
Yeah, do paid work.
Yeah.
Which is it's completely unethical on any standard, whether AGDA sets it or not. I think that's fundamental.
It's against the law, actually.
Yeah. And I think that it needs to be addressed. And I think we need to start talking loudly about this, not just AGDA putting out a policy. I think it needs to be us generating the noise that's going to get people outside of AGDA noticing this thing is happening.
Mm-hmm.
It's I do think that there is a role for two things, like work experience for say high school age students and maybe early university students, to have a 2 week or a 1 week period where they go in, absorb what it's like to be within a studio environment, and, you know, that can be formally organized by the school or the institution, and I think that has a place, but we need to define what it is and what those parameters are in a best case scenario. And same with internships. And I think there is perhaps if there is a requirement via tertiary institution to provide for a student to have an internship of a week or 2 weeks or a set period, and they are approaching studios to do that, I can see why that might be preferred to be an unpaid internship.
Mm-hmm.
But if it is, and it needs to have some strict protocols around it, a very short time frame, no overtime, they get lunchtime just like everyone else, you know, maybe a travel allowance, and think just there needs to be some parameters set for best practice. And any other internship outside of that needs to be paid for. Mm-hmm. That whole adage, if you can't afford to pay your interns, you can't afford interns.
Yeah.
I think that's almost the thing. That's our mantra. That's what we need to go out to the market with and start yelling it. Because I don't like seeing people taken advantage of.
Mm.
I've heard stories of studios that have had an intern for, you know, almost 12 months that's not being paid. And they only got paid if their work got accepted by the client. And
so is that one thing that I know you talked about earlier of, like, how, you know, we couldn't get rid of someone's membership, for example. But in this, you know, and that's on, you know, you couldn't do it for free pitching because that's a fine line, and how you choose to run your business is up to you. But this one you're saying is slightly different. Is that something you could revoke a membership?
Oh, most definitely, because we do have the power to revoke a membership based on unethical behavior and transgressing the law. And as you said, some of these practices are definitely against the law. So we need to be able to, obviously, we've got to be careful about making sure that we know that we are, you know, we're absolutely sure that they are doing so. And part of me also sort of thinks, well, you know, what if someone's doing that, what are they going to care about an AGDA membership? To me, it's more about the AGDA taking a stand and saying whatever value you put on it, we don't feel that you're suitable for it.
Yeah, there's definitely things that are right and wrong, and where you can make that call, there's no reason you shouldn't be able to take the full the full kind of what do you call it, reprimand for it. So we touched on briefly a little bit the topic of equality.
Yes.
And which can take many forms, obviously. But one thing that I've sort of seen come up recently is the Dames and Dumplings event, which seem to have been quite popular. I think definitely seen them in Melbourne and Sydney. Obviously, I haven't been to them. And what's the I get the feeling they've come out of the councils, so more regionally than they have nationally. What happens with them now, and does that kind of change anything nationally? Is it showing that it's how important it is?
Oh, absolutely. And this is the power of what AGDA has, the network of volunteers that AGDA has with our regional councils and junior councils. So Dames and Dumplings actually came out of the New South Wales Junior Council, and it was put forward as an informal mentoring panel. So a group of senior female creatives and junior female creatives went and had dumplings and had a chat. And it was wildly successful in terms of the feedback that we got. The model, the format, is fantastic. It suits how we've had feedback that the standard mentoring model isn't attractive to some females, particularly younger females. They're not quite sure of that process. You know, getting together as a group, discussing and sharing ideas with multiple people at a time, really struck a chord with the women that attended. So we rolled it out in Melbourne, same feedback, it ran pretty much exactly the same, and we'll be pushing this as a nationalized event. And this is not the first time that this has happened. Like, this is why we have a clear channel from each regional council up to the head office or NAT operations, which is myself, Anita and Steve. And anything that works anywhere else, whether it's Perth or Tassie or Adelaide or Sydney, we will look at rolling it out nationally under a, you know, nationally coordinated brand, because part of our remit is to actually deliver these benefits to designers who are in Hobart, designers who are in Perth, who may not get access to the events that happen in Sydney. So we roll their version out there. And the thing I like about it, it's got a great name. It's got that alliteration that, you know, Dames and Dumplings, it works. It's informal. Like, and it really speaks to what AGDA does best, is that getting people together to have a chat, talk about things. And out of that bubbles these ideas and connections and people. And what we've noticed is happening is out of that informal chat, there's been some more strengthening of individual connections between two people that really are going to become a mentor-mentee role. So it's the way in which we start the mentoring program rather than a mentoring program in its own right, even though it has value to any junior female designer going along to one of these will walk away with some value. I think that the long-term plan is that this is the seed that we plant to start to get these mentoring relationships growing.
So I noticed I was at the 2020 AGDA, the networking event.
Yes.
Which was really, really good. It was so industry and students. And I heard that about the kind of the mentoring program that was going to launch. And so I'd love to hear a little bit, so obviously that is a more formal program, but I'd love to hear a little bit more about that, because I haven't heard too much about it since. How is that going, and how do people get into it? Where did it come from?
Well, you're talking about the one in Sydney, because we've been doing mentoring programs around the country for about 20 years. So we have,
I got the impression it was a newer one in Sydney.
Yeah. What's happening in Sydney is that they had one in the past that it's sort of, was put on the back burner for a while, and now it's being reinvigorated. But we run mentoring programs around the country, and you know, sometimes, some years they're very successful, some years they're not. It's a difficult thing for AGDA to manage and facilitate, because it relies entirely on the relationship between the two people. So our role as a matchmaker needs to have some rigor around it, and also the finding the mentors to actually fill those roles is important. And I think what we're trying to do is to talk to the senior members within AGDA and actually really talk about the benefits to them of being a mentor to a younger designer. The older crew, so you know, designers who are in their mid to late 50s and beyond, they always saw mentoring as quite a natural thing. They were always chatting to some younger designer, and I think I've been a mentor to several designers over the years, and some I still keep in contact with, and I've had some even work for me. So it's definitely a positive for both sides, and I think we need to sell that to this younger generation who are just hitting into that senior area, that it's important to pass that knowledge down and help guide people through. And you will actually benefit from it. You will grow and benefit yourself. It's a really difficult process to manage, though, because you get one bad relationship and it sort of infects the whole program. And I see our role less as a facilitator, but more of a matchmaker, and we focus on that in most of the states. But I can see anyone who's in New South Wales, I just say, look, keep an eye on what's happening on our website, and sign up to our newsletter. You'll certainly find out about it.
Yeah. You said to me once that there was a few things that you would like to put straight around people's perceptions of AGDA and what it is and what it isn't. This is probably as good a time as any. and you know, it's been in response to kind of, is it a not-for-profit? Is it a commercial organization? All those types of things. Do you have like the new boilerplate of, or the existing boilerplate probably, of what AGDA is and isn't?
Yeah, look, AGDA is a not-for-profit. Not-for-profit doesn't mean we run at a loss. Not-for-profit means that the profits that we make are fed back into the industry. According to the remit and the charter that is included in our constitution, which is the development, professional development of the design industry. So we do. There's no exclusive set of people who take the profit and run. There is no individual that is taking the profits and spending it on their own personal projects. It's all fed back into the industry. We also participate in the Australian Design Alliance, which is to lobby government on behalf of the design industry, where we work with DIA and other design bodies. And we're also part of ICOD, which is the International Community of Design Bodies. So these, we're a legitimate industry body in Australia. We're not a private enterprise. We're not here to make money for me or anyone else sitting on the board. Everybody that commits to AGDA and has a role within AGDA is doing it for the betterment of the design industry. So it's it can get frustrating when you sort of have to sort of reiterate that all the time, because we don't run an event in Sydney just to make money for AGDA. We do run an event in Sydney at a profit sometimes, most of the time, and that profit allows us to subsidise events in Hobart and Perth. Beakers that cost a lot of money to get to Perth and to Hobart and to Adelaide wouldn't normally go there, but we will pay the money and subsidise it so that those designers don't miss out on seeing the big name speakers. So that's part of the answer. The thing that may have confused people is that we recently changed our corporate structure. We became a company limited by guarantee. Why that was done, there was a number of practical reasons, but the main reason was that provides protection. It limits the liability for the board members, but it also removes the liability for the volunteer councillors in all the regional councils, because under our prior association structure, every single member, every single volunteer around the country was liable for any of the losses that AGDA incurred, which put everyone at risk.
Yeah.
So that change was both reasonable, it was needed, and it's enabled us to operate much more effectively and much more efficiently than we have done in the past. And we've been able to make decisions that get us to a point where we can now think beyond just surviving day in, day out, and trying to work out where the money for that event in Brisbane went, or the, who's got the access to the account in Hobart. Just as an aside, when I took over this role, we had, I think, something like 26 different bank accounts around the country.
Yeah, wow. With
various amounts of money, and I had to try and consolidate all of that, and it was mind-numbing. But yeah, no one actually knew the financial position of AGDA until 6 months after the fact, whereas we are now in a position where we are projecting 12 months into the future, and we know where we stand immediately.
And given this is a podcast and therefore not visual, I don't want everyone to suddenly think that you look like Scrooge McDuck counting 26 bank accounts. I imagine it wasn't necessarily a fruitful effort.
No. There was like one account that had like $26 in it. Yeah, but it was still there, and we're paying fees on it. Yeah, so we had to compile it all together. But yeah, there is that actually leads to another thing I'd like to correct. I had someone ask me the other day that, what about this $1 million that AGDA has? Apparently there was a rumor going around that AGDA has an account with $1 million in it. And I can tell you right now, no, we don't. We never had an account with $1 million in it. We did have a term deposit account, which we were putting money away for a rainy day. And it rained heavily for a couple of years. And we are now only just getting back into a position where we can start thinking beyond the survival mode and starting to project forward into the future.
Yeah, right. Okay. Well, that's good. That's good to clear up. As I see you in your Dolce & Gabbana glasses and your Herman Miller chair. Not really. I'm only joking. moving towards the end of the conversation. So I think it's good that we've cleared quite a bit up. And now, I'm really interested in sort of what you would like to see happen in the future. And if there were sort of three things that AGDA's most focused on right now, what would they be?
The number one is diversity across all our activities. And that includes all aspects of diversity, not just gender. Age and regionality are two big ones. And it applies across everything we do, from events, speakers, awards juries, committees, Hall of Fame, discussion panels, the mentors, the regional councils, etc. So everything we do is under this microscope. And what we are doing is we're building this rigor into our operational guidelines and protocols. So as I mentioned about the awards jury curation, there's this protocol is set up. So this is how we achieve a diverse jury. And this is what we need to do to actually achieve that. So it's one thing to say it needs to be done, but there needs to be, and we've got enough experience now to know that we know how to do it. We can actually say we follow these processes, we'll achieve a diverse jury. And I think it's also important for us to talk about diversity can't just be seen in an individual snapshot in time. It needs to be looked across the long term, that you can't just pull up a single panel and say that panel isn't diverse if we have achieved diversity across the year on a number of different things. So it's a difficult thing to do, but it's a really worthwhile thing to do, and it's really important to AGDA, and it has been for a while. So what we felt we were doing innately anyway, we're now doing formally, and we are putting structures in place so that it will continue to be done and become the way we do things. The other thing is, where are we? Community is the other thing. So I think that what's been lost along the way, I think, and perhaps as AGDA was in survival mode, we were focused more on running events that weren't losing money rather than communicating that, you know, AGDA is a community of people. And, you know, that's why we are a membership-based organisation. It's owned by its members in the industry. We need to really stress that point. And if the community decides we're no longer needed, that's fine. We'll disappear. But yep. I think it's important for the community to understand that this is what AGDA is. It's not a separate third-party entity that's coming in and inflicting itself. It grew from within the design industry and is still an integral part of the industry. And the third thing would be leadership. AGDA, I think, has not shown as much leadership as it needed to in recent times. And I think we are much more confident in our role within the industry these days, having stronger boards and a much clearer idea of where we need to go has helped. And I think you'll start to see, as per our discussion around internships, free pitching, diversity, the student pathway through their career, I think you'll see a much stronger and firmer AGDA taking a leadership role on those issues.
That's great. That's great to hear. Cool. Well, I hope you feel like also you got everything out and heard, because that was important as part of this conversation. And, you know, thanks for being pretty honest. And I think honest around some of the things that haven't worked as well, you know, and therefore that's kind of set up stuff for the future. And I also want to say thanks because AGDA gave its support and helped distribute the survey of the mentally healthy work that we've been doing as well. So, and that I must say that was very easy to get. So thanks for that.
Not a problem. We love seeing that stuff and the stuff that Jim did, and like there was, yes, there's a lot of that stuff coming out, and it's really valuable stuff for us to know.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We love what you're doing. We love what Matt's doing up in Brisbane with the design
conference. Yeah.
We love what Mirella's doing in Victoria.
We're mental.
There's a whole heap of initiatives out there that we, AGDA really believes in, and we don't want to set ourselves up in competition to. And we see that our role is to support you and, you know, help spread the word, and so that you get your initiatives get to grow and do what you want to do. But it also helps us provide our members and our community access to what it is you're doing.
Yeah, and vice versa. I think, you know, when we see things, we'll definitely support them too. So, all right. Well, that was a great chat. Thank you very much.
Fantastic. Thank you for the opportunity.
Cool. Thanks.
See ya.
Once again, thanks to Nick. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did enjoy it, please do share it. Share it out onto your social media, share it out with your friends, your colleagues, or just, you know, tell someone on the bus that you listen to a good podcast and maybe they'll listen to it if you think they might be interested. If not, send me a message and tell me why the podcast wasn't that interesting this week. Or if you want to hear about different issues in the industry, if you want to hear from different people, please definitely send me a message. You can do that through any of our socials, so at MVR Not Creative, or I'm also on social media at ADWrighty, ADWrighty. And yeah, so this is it's the end of 2018, and I'm going to take a little bit of a pause, probably for 3 or 4 weeks on the podcast, just to take a break. Gets a bit much trying to do this every single week. And so in the meantime, what I would love to do is hear from you and hear about your ideas, about the things that you'd love to get more involved in. Also, go out to nevernotcreative.org, check out the Creatives Pledge. So you'll remember that we put this together a little while ago. In fact, we talked about it today as well in the episode. And the Creative Pledge is very close now. It's up. you can actually now go on and sign it. So when I mean sign it, kind of put your name in at the bottom, and put your name to the fact that you're happy to back this pledge. Take some of the imagery and the lines from the pledge. Feel free to share them through your social channels. Feel free to just print them out, put them next to your computer. I don't know, make them a sticker, stick it on your laptop, whatever you want to do. If you want to redesign them, love that. Redesign them, send us them back in, we'll showcase them. And it, you know, the ones that really kind of ring true for you, feel free to put them up and share, and we'll retweet and regram and rehash and repush whatever we can. I think the Creditors Pledge is really important for us to have a good stab at a beginning of a better industry and some standards to hold us to. So please feel free to get involved in that. Again, send me some messages and have a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. One final thanks to Streamtime for the year. Wouldn't have any of the opportunity to do what I do if it wasn't for the flexibility I get from Streamtime. So if you're into project management software, you think you're ready for a change, a new year is as good a time as any. Go check out streamtime.net for jobs, invoicing, quoting, scheduling, estimating, time tracking, time planning, whatever you want to do. We can usually do it within Streamtime. Thanks again for listening. It's been a cracking year. Thanks for your support. Thanks for messages throughout the year, and looking forward to 2019.